This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
All right, guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. And if you're betting college football bowl games, and that can be a dicey endeavor, we're the podcast for you. We're releasing breakdowns for every matchup with new episodes dropping almost every day. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And tonight we're getting some new details about that Trump-Trudeau dinner from two people who were at the table. We are told that when Trudeau told President-elect Trump that new tariffs would kill the Canadian economy, Trump joked to him that if Canada can't survive without ripping off the U.S. to the tune of $100 billion a year, then maybe Canada should become the 51st state and Trudeau could become its governor.
So that is the type of diplomacy that is taking place at Mar-a-Lago right now. And I would have to say, at least on the surface, from a civilian like myself, that appears to be a little bit different than the way Joe Biden has been handling things as of this point in time. Let's get to our guest. I'm excited to talk to Jim Carafano. He's a senior counselor to the president and E.W. Richardson Fellow for International Engagement at the Heritage Foundation. Jim, welcome back to the show. Hope you had a wonderful Thanksgiving.
I did. Yeah.
Did you get to see the grandbabies? Did you get to see the grandkids?
I did. He's pretty awesome. And now I'm in Madrid. Places.
Yeah, this is the way our show gets around the world. It's through Jim Carafano. What's your take so far on how Donald Trump's transition, like what kind of effect, he's not the president yet, 48 days until he takes the oath of office once again. What kind of effect is his transition having on our relationship with these foreign countries, including our neighbors?
Yeah, so I'll mention two things. Based on, as you know, I was in part of the Trump transition team in 2016, and it's not a reflection of me, but it's just, this is very, very different. The one thing people should never do is think about Trump as president as if it's the Donald Trump of 2016. He was president for 4 years. He has been watching world affairs, been engaged in world affairs for 4 years, and I think you should rightly expect that you're not going to see the transition like we did, I think it's in two ways we've already seen this. One is the speed and the breadth and the political astuteness of what he's done in appointing a cabinet, which does, and most importantly, I think, really reflect the movement of conservatives that help bring into power, the notion that everybody gets a voice. And I think that's really important. I think it's a team that will actually work very well together. But the other thing that we didn't see in 2016 is we did not see Trump move out with the power because, you know, you're not the president. You can't negotiate on behalf of the United States. We only have one president at a time. Everybody knows that. But there are things that you can do to signal what you will do when you become president. That's very, very different. And we didn't see a ton of that in 2016 because he really wasn't prepared to take office, and he didn't have the global vision in particular. I mean, there were things that Trump knew he wanted to do. He went in office, like secure the border and some other things, but he didn't really have a holistic vision of how to govern that spanned both how do we make America free, safe, and prosperous, but also how to engage with the rest of the world. He has that this time, and we've seen him use that authority and power in a much, much more effective way than it did in 2016.
I mean, isn't that kind of the price that you pay when you bring in an outsider? They don't understand the bureaucracy or the systems that are in place. It's almost as if you kind of have to go through that process, at least to an extent in the initial time. But the amount of comparison that American voters and taxpayers are going to have between the system, the status quo with the Joe Biden presidency and his kind of more globalist approach to what's going on in our foreign policy. Watch here. I'm going to share this. You probably read this already, but this is a Truth Social post from Donald Trump. Everybody is talking about the hostages who are being held so violently, inhumanely, and against the will of the entire world in the Middle East, but it's all talk and no action. Please let this truth serve to represent that if the hostages are not released prior to January 20th, 2025, the date that I proudly assume office as a president of the United States, there will be all hell to pay in the Middle East. And for those in charge who perpetrated these atrocities against humanity, those responsible will be hit harder than anybody has been hit in the long and storied history of the United States of America. Release the hostages now. What do you make from that from President-elect Donald Trump?
Well, two things. One is, there is a clarity of message there about policy in the Middle East that we never got from Joe Biden, who always somehow seemed to want to straddle the powers to say, I'm not abandoning Israel, but you know, we need a two-state solution. We need to work with Gaza. I'm not going to go against the global infight. I'm not going to criticize people for wanting to destroy Israel for October 7th. So we have a clarity there of purpose that we certainly didn't have before. And again, I think it's a reflection of the Trump learning in the first term. And when you come in with a clarity of purpose and you're willing to put American power behind that, it has a dramatic effect. We also saw this, you know, for the thing with Canada, the tariffs with Canada and Mexico, Trump was very clear. He just wanted to send a crystal clear signal that Mexico and Canada are going to cooperate on border issues, particularly on the transnational drug, crime, and human trafficking things, or we're not going to be good neighbors. He sent that message loud and clear, and we immediately heard back from the leaders of both countries saying, yes, we get the message and we will work with you. That's all it took. If Joe Biden had done that, he could have probably achieved the exact same result, but he didn't. The other thing I think this shows is, so again, something we've talked a lot about in the show in the past, I think the burning dumpster fire for U.S. foreign policy in the most dangerous place right now is the Middle East. And it is the first place where Trump has to act quickly and decisively. I don't think it's Europe. I don't think it's NATO. I don't think it's Ukraine. I think it's in the Middle East. And what we saw in that message today was a clear affirmation that the president intends to do exactly that.
We're speaking with Jim Carafano, a senior counselor to the president and E.W. Richardson Fellow for International Engagement at the Heritage Foundation. When you look at the cabinet, the appointments, the nominations that Donald Trump is assembling, especially those, you know, like a Marco Rubio, who are going to be a top diplomat on the global stage for the United States in this administration, do you feel like these appointments, especially compared to 2016, do they all have a very clear message to the American people, but also the world, as to what America is going to look like in the next 4 years?
Well, in the sense that I think we have a coherent team that reflects the breadth of what most Americans in this country want. We also, I think, have a team that's going to work well with their president, know how to work with their president. What people, I think, make a mistake is they look at individual appointments as some kind of tea leaf to say, well, this is exactly going to be our policy on this, or this is going to exactly be our policy on that. And actually, what Trump actually prefers is a diversity of views and opinions, because Trump is the decider in chief, and he likes to hear different views, because that's what helps him think through what is exactly the right answer. So, for example, a lot of people have looked at the appointment of Keith Kellogg, who's an old friend, by the way, and say, well, what does this tell us about the negotiations with Russia over Ukraine? I tell you exactly what it tells you. It tells you that the president's going to be in charge of the negotiations. He did not pick Keith Kellogg to tell him how to negotiate with the Russians. He picked Keith Kellogg because he's a faithful and forceful voice that for the Russians to speak to the Russians. So Keith is not driving policy. Keith is going to help the president drive policy. And I think that's what we will see with the cabinet. Mm.
Jim Carafano with us right now. NPR is the first article that I pulled up here, but says just within the last 24 hours, the United States is preparing to send Ukraine an additional $725 million in military assistance, including counter-drone systems and munitions for its high-mobility artillery rocket system. We've heard the Biden administration say, we're going to send as much money as we can, as fast as we can, before they have to turn over the reins to Donald Trump. I think conservatives get super political over this without always knowing the full details. I would be one that would be apt to do that because I'm not as educated on it. What do you want American taxpayers, you know, seeing another heap of money being sent to Ukraine, what do you want them to know about America's role with the conflict in Russia and Ukraine?
Well, the first thing is, look, first of all, this money was already voted willingly by Republicans in Congress. And Donald Trump knew that this package was on the table. And if Donald Trump wanted to oppose it during the campaign, he would have said so, and he didn't. So I think somehow, I think filling out the military aid as somehow putting something over on Trump, I don't think that's true. And the other thing is, look, Trump wants Ukraine to be in the strongest position as possible to negotiate with the Russians. So the idea that somehow starving the Ukrainians for weapons and ammunition is going to make it easier to get the Russians to back off and stop, I mean, does that actually pass the common sense test? And I hear people talk about this. What I don't hear them talking about is there are lots of things that were in those bills that Republicans 1,000% opposed and are truly egregious spending. Like, we have to spend every ounce of dollars on green energy, including billion-dollar bailouts for EV companies that are going to fail anyway. And, I mean, I think we ought to be obsessing on the things that we know Republicans never wanted to begin with. And that, by the way, when you add that money up, it dwarfs. It absolutely, completely dwarfs the spending on Ukraine. There's an enormous amount of accountability to be had for. Yeah. Much of it is in political spending. And it's not even like spending money overseas, you know, building houses in Africa. It's corruption and waste inside the United States. It's Americans stealing money. Americans stealing money from other Americans. And that ought to just really infuriate us. So sometimes I think, you know, we all have our pet, you know, thing. And here's the thing. Some people don't like the spending on Ukraine, that whatever. But the thing is, we all agree that President Trump is the right guy for the job. And he wants to do exactly the right thing, which is make the war stop, because the war is not good for anybody.
When President Trump, you know, he has spoken in a way about Vladimir Putin that does not make people feel comfortable, that he's willing to have a respectable conversation with this deplorable person. Trump has said that he's going to go in and he's going to stop the conflict. Is that something that Donald Trump and American diplomacy really has the power to do?
Oh, well, we should be clear. Only Vladimir Putin has the power to stop the war, because he's the only one that can stop fighting. What Trump can do is what Joe Biden never did, which is, one, to have a plan, two, to be willing to really tell Putin there are serious consequences for what you're doing, and if you don't stop, you will suffer those consequences. And I am not going to be scared off by you and your threats. It's just not going to happen. I'm not worried about World War III starting, because if you're facing the full power of America, you are not going to start World War III. You are going to go hide somewhere. I also think he's the one guy that can turn to the Ukrainians and say, and the Europeans, and say, you need to be realistic about what's achievable, what can be done, and the burden that you're going to have to share to make sure there's not future wars in Europe. The reason why there was a war in the second invasion of Ukraine was because after the first invasion of Ukraine in 2014, we did nothing. Deals don't end wars. It's what you do after the deal is signed, after the shooting stops, that ends the next war. We had this agreement with the Russians. We did nothing to enforce the Russians. Matter of fact, we bent over backwards. Europe tried to build Nord Stream 2. They tried to do business with the Russians. They didn't care if the Russians... They sent them every single signal that we're not really serious about stopping you again. And so we invaded again. So it's not just getting a deal, which everybody focuses on. Everybody thinks the deal is the big deal. It's not. It's what you're going to do the day after the deal. And the one thing I think we can trust Donald Trump on, if he says fighting's going to stop, and if it does stop, I'm going to do this, and then there won't be another war. And if you don't stop, you know, we should look at it this way. If you want to see how Trump negotiates, look at the deal he just put on the table for Hamas and the hostages.
Yeah.
That's the kind of deal the Russians are going to get.
Well, it's a new day, and we're looking forward to that 48 days from now when the status quo changes. But it does seem like he's getting a jump start on it, and his words are pretty clear on his Truth Social. He gets to speak directly to the people. And, Jim, we always appreciate you coming and making some clarity of these issues for us as well. Thanks for being here today.
Yeah, you should play that song. It's a new day, it's a new dawn, and I'm feeling fine.
Yeah, like that. I'm feeling good. We will. I would like your version of it, though. We'll come into your next segment with it. So you just, you know, sing it out, record it in your phone. It'll be chef's kiss. We'd love to have that.
That is not happening.
If it does, though, you send it to us. Jim, take
you'll
care.
Get an exclusive.
Take care. We'll talk to you again soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Can you imagine that? Jim Carafano, Michael Bublé mashup. We'll take it here on the Andy Fry Show. All right, quick break. When we come back, Mike Davis, another fiery guest that we're going to have on here next. We're going to talk about the Hunter Biden. We're going to talk about Cash Patel. We're going to talk about Donald Trump's clear focus for what he wants to do starting on day one. How will Senate Republicans react to the people who Donald Trump wants to do what he has committed to the American people he will do if they elected him? And they did. We'll talk to Mike Davis, the founder and president of the Article 3 Project, next. Don't go away.